iTunes International. Virus free.
Around the world and down your street.
In the UK, Ling Pang interviews people from all around the world, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
This is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International, and I talked with singer, vocal coach, and Broadway star Peggy Blue, and she's already been to my show before. How are you, Peggy?
I am so honored to be speaking to you again, and thank you to all your listeners who listen to this. You are an amazing woman, and I'm grateful.
Oh, thank you so much. So nice to speak with you. The 70s were erupted with great music from the Motown, R&B, and dance music. Those were the years that you becoming more active in music, Peggy?
Well, I actually became really active in the music industry in the 60s. With a group called The Crystals, the Do Run Run. I don't know if you remember, and the Sand Pebbles before that.
I do remember the band. You started singing at like 3 or 4 years old at your uncle's church?
I started singing at 3. I turned professional singing for the mayor in the town that I was born in North Carolina. He had just won the mayoralship. And he was dear friends with my grandfather, who was a minister, my uncle, who was, they were pastors of churches, and they were in the Masons. They were Masons together. And when the mayor won, he said to my grandfather, "What do we do for music?" And my grandfather said, "You're going to hire my granddaughter, and she's only 3, but you," and they put, Lynn, it was so funny, Lynn, because they put people, because I was so short, they put me on top of the dining room table in the mayor's dining room, and the house is still there in North Carolina. And they said, because my grandfather said, because when Peggy starts singing, she won't be still, and she will run down this table because she has to get to the people at the other end.
Even, you know, as a teenager, I was terrified to talk. How did you develop the courage and confidence so young?
I don't know. It was
natural.
Just a part of me. There's a passage that's in my bio that says she came into the world singing because when the doctors told my mother, you won't give birth to this child for at least another hour or two. And the doctor turned and walked out of the room, and I popped out in one piece, complete, and of my mother's stomach. And my grandmother said my eyes were open, and I drew a breath and said, "Ha!" And she went, "Oh, my God, look, she's singing." So that's where that passage comes from. She came into the world singing. So that's I've awesome. Never had a problem. I have a problem singing to nobody.
What was your first recording? Do you remember?
Oh, my first recording was with a gospel group called the Nathaniel Lewis Singers, and because that's where I started everything, you know, that I always did. And I was 15, almost 15, not quite. And that was my first professional recording, and I loved it. It was great, but it bothered me because there were no people, and I like singing to audience members. But the group was that we were a group, and we were in the studio together. So it, and then I left the Nat Lewis Singers and went to the Gospel Starlets, but then went back to the Nat Lewis, the Nathaniel Lewis Singers, because when I was 16, they asked me to come to Vegas, and I was, of course, underage. So my uncle said, "She can go, but you'll have to get a tutor and a nanny because she can't, you know, be in a casino." So this was at the Nevada Club in Las Vegas, and I went. Mm-hmm.
So music dominated your life since birth, I would say.
Because my entire family is musical. They play and sing and teach. My mother was a vocal coach. My mother taught. This is going to sound crazy because of the way I sing, but it's the truth. My very first vocal classes were classical, but wow. I couldn't stand it. It taught me how to use my instrument and how to protect my instrument.
So you went on and sang on, written and co-produced and co-arranged many recordings and in movies and on stage for many, many stars like Bob Dylan, Barbara Streisand, Burt Bacharach, Edwin Hopkins,
yeah.
Stevie Wonder, Luther Vandross, Stephanie Mills and the Manhattans. The duet you did with the Manhattans.
Well, but you know, Stephanie Mills and I did a duet together. And that was and that was about Michael Jackson, who did my last single.
Yes, I got that song with yourself, Peggy Blue, and Stephanie Mills. His name is Michael.
Peggy, I'm so glad you're home. Hey, you remember that guy I've been dating? Well, he asked me to marry him. I met a man so handsome, so nice, warm and kind. And every day my life would open.
You know what? Now you don't have to tell me about loving someone who's good to you. 'Cause when he kisses me, it's heaven. Now I can't deny what I feel inside. A heart full of love that's sent from above. His name is
a red Ferrari.
Yeah. Peggy, does your Michael have a cabin near the lake?
You mean the one where you go skinny dipping under the moonlight?
Peggy, does your Michael have a birthmark on his...
And talking about the Manhattans, which feature yourself, Peggy Blue, tell me about song.
Was one of the most monumental moments that I experienced. I was told not to sing it because if you sing it the way you sing, Gerald might think you're trying to out-sing him. So I came under that, and Blue didn't like that I was told that, but I did what I was asked to do. Gerald didn't like it, but I'm telling you, Gerald Austin is one of the most magnificent persons and kind-hearted and sweetheart and super talented. I'd give anything to sing with him again. He was amazing.
Here's your duet with the Manhattans. Let's try love again.
about how things could have been if we stayed together. What a fool I must have been. We could have worked it out and started love again. Well, that goes through my mind. But we kept on fooling around. We let it go, girl, and it slipped away. Oh, what a price to pay.
Admit, I'm really missing the good times that we shared. Well, that goes through my mind, and the way that you used to hold me makes me feel real.
A vocal coach for a couple of seasons on the American Idol series, the movie starring Irene Cara. You voice coached her the song.
I vocal coached her on my living room floor, Guttenberg, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And then because Irene and I were friends. And she was like, I don't know how to sing this. And I was like, come on over here so I can show you. And then I went into the studio with her when she was recording it. And then I also sang the background. That's me, you hear, singing the soprano part on the background.
On the song called Fame.
Fame, yeah. Yeah. And I also hired her to sing with the band for the man who wrote the Broadway play, The Wiz, his name was Charlie Smalls. And mm-hmm. Charlie Smalls and I used to be in the band with him. And we worked and we needed another singer. He said, can you get me another singer, Hyman? I said, yes. So I called Irene to give her something to do. She's a talented lady and she's gorgeous.
The movie, you never forget it. It's one of the most loved movie in history, isn't it? In
right.
entertainment.
Yes, it is.
It is, you know. And another great name associated with a song, I Got the Money.
I Got the Money. That was from Michael Jackson. I was doing a play, the play called Sisterella, in Europe. And he was the writer, along with Larry Hart. The name of the play is called Sisterella, which is Sister Ella, but it's Sisterella, one word. And he, you know, I was told, come into the studio because Michael wants to record. And I thought, you know, when I was in the studio that day, I thought they were just getting sounds and getting my, you know, testing the mic. And all of a sudden, the engineer said to me, sing the whole song. Don't just sing the whole thing. And I did. And he looked like it. And all of a sudden, Michael Jackson got up and started walking out of the studio. And I was like, oh, my God, he hates me. He's leaving. And I ran behind him and said, you don't like me? And he turned to me and said, oh, it's perfect. You're done. I was like, it's perfect. Nothing about me has ever been perfect. I'm so grateful. I mean, he blessed me that day. And yeah, I Got the Money came out. And I was just listening to it the other day. And I was like, oh, my God.
Is it an 80s track?
That's from 1997.
Okay. I Got the Money.
The time for mourning and weeping is done. Put the past behind me, 'cause a new day has begun. Well, I'm out of the darkness and I see the light. Yes, Lord, I see green and it's burning.
beautiful song. You have worked with Stevie Wonder. What music you have collaborated with him?
No, I just was one of his backup singers. Mm. And we did Motown Returns to the Apollo together. Mm. And it was an amazing, amazing night. There were so many stars there that it was hard for me to sing. Looking around me, I was like, okay, get a grip, Peggy, because you're one of the top sopranos and you're right on the front row. So don't. Oh, God, he was so sweet and kind, and so was Prince. And I mean, everybody. There were so many big deal stars there that night. I was probably, in my mind, I was the least of all of them.
A big song by Stephanie Mills. Never knew love like this before.
Never knew love like this before. Oh, yeah. My God. I used to be one of her background singers. And
wow.
You didn't know that? Yeah, I used to be one of her background singers. As a matter of fact, we just talked on computer a couple of days ago. She sent me a message, and we just talked.
How is
she's a dear friend. Now she's in the studio again. Stephanie Mills is awesome. She got many hits, many, many hit records, and she was, I mean, being on stage watching her work was like heaven for me. And I played Auntie M to her Dorothy in The Wiz on Broadway. She was my Dorothy on Broadway. And I would be, too, if the studios hadn't all closed. I hope they reopen so I can go back and finish my work.
Have you been actively performing around New York and America? You're not from New York,
yes.
Are you? You're from California?
I was born in North Carolina, near Fort Bragg, but I grew up in New York. So I am a New Yorker. I didn't move to California until 86. 87, after I won Star Search and got my record deal with Capitol Records. Mm. That's when I came here.
You've been there ever since?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Why unfortunately? Why?
Well, because I miss my family. They're back east. I miss my family. I miss the clubs. I miss Broadway. I miss all of that.
Were you thinking of going back?
I thought about it, and I don't know. We'll see. If I get work that takes me back, then maybe I'll go, at some point. Mm-hmm, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I don't mess with that too much because I have so many other things that I'm dealing with.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Because of this quiet time, are you recording new music and making new albums now?
Yeah, I was in the process of doing that before this pandemic hit. And then the studios all closed. And so I haven't been doing my vocal coaching and teaching. I haven't been able to do that. But when it opens, I will go back. And I just got an offer for a friend of mine who is in Europe. He's in England. Would I do a duet with him? And I'm like, yeah, tell me the song or write it, send it to me. And because I have it, I used to own or co-own my own studio and before everything got stolen away from me.
Stolen?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean stolen?
You don't know the story. Stolen.
No. What do you mean?
Yes, it did. I mean that the piece of doo-doo that I was married to for over 40 years, almost 45 years, abandoned me and our only son. I don't like to talk about him because he's trash, but he was the only man I've ever been in love with in my entire life. And all of a sudden, when I wasn't home one Sunday, he moved out everything because he was a cheater and a methamphetamine addict and cocaine addict. But I don't want to talk about him, but he stole everything from me, and I'm the one who bought it all. If you didn't know my name first, you wouldn't have known his, because I'm the one who pushed him ahead. And But the only reason why Bob Dylan and people like that and Burt Bacharach were in the studio was because of me.
Mm. But now, you are a strong lady. Stay strong.
I have no choice. Whatever his life is now is not a part of mine. Mm. And nobody did music like us together. Mm. We were a phenomenon. And I know that, but unfortunately, that's finished. And my son is still hurting behind that, but it's okay. Mm. It's okay. I'm trying my best to still get over it, and that's hard Because, you know, Lynn, it's one thing to say I love you and then to say I'm in love with you. Those are two different things. They mean different things. Being in love with somebody, I was willing to give my life for him. And I wrote it, and I can prove it because I still have the letter notarized. When I had our son, the doctor said, if you want me, we see a problem. If there is one, who do you want us to save, you or the baby? I said save the baby, but they weren't going to do it. So I wrote it and had it notarized. Mm-hmm. Let me go. And because that would have been the one of the most important things I could have done for him. Has he ever done anything important for me? No. Unless it was something that he wanted. I've gotten him hired for so many gigs, you wouldn't believe it. But that's okay, because he was talented. I'm doing the best I can. I'm staying straight up, and I know that God answers prayer. And, all I can do is look forward and look up.
Do you often wonder that the success of your life is contributed to your self-belief and hard work in music?
Yes, yeah. I do. And also, it's been very hard, but I'm not a quitter. So I keep trying. If I do something and it doesn't work, I figure out what can I do to make it work better next time. Yeah, I never want to stop growing and learning, ever.
So looking forward, have you got shows on your schedule?
I'm working on one right now. As a matter of fact, I'm working on two right now. And But I would love to go back to Broadway. They're doing a lot of reoccurrence. And I'm going to call George Faison and ask him, think about putting The Wiz back up. Because why not?
Do you like doing Broadway?
I love Broadway. I love it.
You love it?
Yeah.
Doing Broadway, it's musical.
Well, it's musical, shows. But it's also a lot of discipline. And I love discipline. Love it.
Musicals is something that is hard to prepare because you're live on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make mistakes.
Well, if you make a mistake, you have to learn how to cover it so that it doesn't look like a mistake.
But that's hard to do.
Well, not really.
No?
Not really.
That's how good you guys are.
Yeah, you have to. Broadway is like reality. It's like reality TV because it's live at the moment. And everything that's going on is monumental for that moment.
And what are your favorite Broadway shows?
Oh, God. The Wiz. I love Hamilton. Dreamgirls.
Oh,
loved
yes. It. Yeah. And we miss all that. We're really missing all that.
Yeah, I do. I miss it desperately. I lost about 3 gigs in Germany because of this pandemic.
You lost 3?
Yeah, they closed them down. They have to. Can't travel. Nobody's coming to the. These were concerts.
As soon as things are back on, will you be out of the door and performing? Wouldn't you?
You bet I will.
Thank you for coming.
You know, you're chosen by God on high, and people like you are few. And we appreciate you and love you because you keep us in the light. Without you, we would be nothing.
Thank you.
Because of your energy, because of your values and because the love you have for your job and for other people. You are a giver. What you're doing now may be an interview, but it's giving. You are amazing to us and you make us feel good. For all of us who interview with you, you make us feel good.
Oh, thank you so much. So nice to speak with you. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's have Fame, the movie theme song by Irene Cara and the backing vocal by Peggy.
Look at me and tell me what you see. You
This is Ling Pang for Bond 9 Tunes International, and I talked with singer, vocal coach, and Broadway star Peggy Blue.
Thomas Booker for Bondi Tunes International.
Hi, gang.
Hey, what's this you got?
I'm doing right well.
28 August 2021, San Antonio de Béar. It is cloudy and sultry on this late summer morning as we arrived at the site of a rally at New Braunfels Street in East Houston. Despite their best efforts and the very marginal wins of the last elections, the Democratic Party and progressive support will become neutralized by the first of next month. This is a voting rights rally to spur determination and resolution to prepare to battle the conservative establishment at the election in November of next year. Texas is about to become a partial police state, and as far as there can be one in the United States. Absolute conservatism is about to become the social standard, and the coincidence of its establishing itself here, while the Taliban has reacquired its absolutist hold on Afghanistan, is now a disturbing parallel. But today is the day to get back to basics, rally the folks, renew the struggle for racial equality of citizens, and gird their loins for the battles at the polls under the gaze of the statue of Martin Luther King that looks over the plaza that bears his name. To remove all doubt about the intent of the voter suppression bill, the Speaker of the Texas House had a little bit of a Freudian slip.
Members, this is a reminder to everyone to be civil and respectful of our colleagues as we debate SB 1. The chair would appreciate members not using the word racism this afternoon.
The storyline for every Republican adopted from Donald Trump is to declare there to be an emergency, and voting must be reformed to eliminate the possibility of fraud. This is the extension of Trump's big lie that he lost the election because of rigged ballot counting or mass voter fraud. To keep the lie viable, the liars themselves had to stick to the pre-written narrative. But Speaker of the House Dade Phelan mysteriously let slip the irony of the true fraud in his request for civility. What the Speaker let slip was apparently a thinly concealed intent to return to the days of Jim Crow, the post-slavery era when blacks were kept in an underclass and cheated out of their rights as citizens, as is recalled by this gentleman.
They got new stuff now, but let's look at the past for a minute. When you would go try and register to vote, some little town perhaps, even a big town, they would ask you to pay a poll tax. Maybe it was $1, $1.25 back in those days. And if you had the money, or if you didn't have the money, well, you couldn't vote. You had to pay to vote. If you had the money, they had another little trick for you if you were black or brown. And the other next little trick was a literacy test. And they would give poor whites a book to read, a kindergarten, first grade book to read. And when a black or brown person came up there to take the literacy test, they would be given a medical book to read from. If, and now let's just walk with me hypothetically. Black guy coming up there, he's got the money, he got $1.25. He can read from a medical book. Well, here's what's next. The sheriff might pop his gun down on the table and say, "You sure you want to vote here, boy?" Or he might say, "You know, I thought I saw you walking down the street the other day with two little, beautiful little girls. They sure were cute and looked all healthy and fine today. Wonder what they're gonna look like tomorrow. You sure you wanna vote?" And this is what they would do. Now it's different. Now they paved the parking lot on election day, so old folks and people that are handicapped can't walk up to the voting booth because the parking lot is being paved on election day. All kinds of shrewd tricks. You can't get water from a guy. You're standing in line, the line's around the corner.
Jim Crow is long gone, but the crowd today knows there is no rest from vigilance.
Some love. What a day, what a day. Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Gente San Antonio. What an honor it is to be among the many leaders gathered today as we unite on not only this historic day, but this historic site. Many battles have started here. Many battles won, some lost, many won, but we have a continued battle today in the area of voter rights. And that's why I'm here. 58 years ago today, 1963, the speech of all speeches, the I Have a Dream speech, was the spark for our nation at a time when our people needed it most. Helping our people all across the nation shift from a mindset that of fear and hate to that of faith and justice, and ultimately for equality. But here we are, as Brother Tommy just shared, the fight continues. And here we are 58 years later in 2021, facing evil forces, that's right, evil forces, that have emerged from the halls of Congress to the State House, working to inflict injustice through draconian voter legislation. Specifically, as we heard, through voter suppression. But let me remind you, the ACLU has identified 61 different types of voter oppression. 61! Throw on top of that, don't forget to add the 400 anti-voter bills in 48 states in the recent years. We must remind ourselves, and I know we're getting ready for the spring, and I see our party leaders here today, but let us remind ourselves that we got to get to and through the spring of primaries and remember in November. In 2022. So hit that, brothers and sisters, are you ready to battle?
Yeah.
Are you ready to mobilize?
Yeah.
Si puede.
Si se puede.
Si puede.
Si se puede.
Si puede.
Si se puede.
By the way, I want to share with you, for those who don't know, I put a coat on today for Dr. King. I put a coat on today for my father. He was born on this day, August 28, 1946. And he shared a story with me that when he was 17 years old, he had heard the speech. It inspired him as a young man, and by his grandfather, took him to many meetings in the West Side to mobilize. My father was a young boy and dedicated his entire life to social justice. I see many of the warriors out there today that have stood by him, like Indio, Esmeralda Pruneda, Rosa Rosales, T.C. Calvert, and the many others, and those that are no longer here with us. So I leave you with a quote. He would have turned 75 years today, 75 years old, and he once said, "The road to civil rights in the name of humanity has many challenges and barriers, but a people united can overcome." I thank you, Dad, for inspiring all of us, inspiring me, planting the seeds, so I see people like Rosa, Bishop Pastor Rosita, who's still advocating the community.
No one attending this rally was fooled by the big lie of Trump's, of course, and the whole purpose for the rally being held is to stand up to the real intent of the Republicans and the conservative Texans to stymie their vote, to rob their right as citizens. What might be noticed by those listening is how this whole rally seems to be like a church service. What must be realized is that it is a church service. this is not so much a religious celebration, which it is, as it is a survival mechanism and an ingrained culture. It has to do with history. At some point during their bondage, slaves embrace the Bible. Not their master's religion. They especially embrace the book of Exodus, almost to be a handbook of survival. This culture, this strong, tightly knit culture, has relied on their religion to see them through the torturous struggle from bondage to citizenship. It has worked, and it makes an impression even on a non-believer like me.
Right here, yeah.
For you today.
Resistance is never futile, although it feels exhausting. The stance we take to break the status quo floats into the void of the cosmos like stardust. We stand deliberate. We speak vehemently. At times that feels as if sound is suctioned right out of our bodies and we might go beyond the bounds of ballistic. Battling to stay sane when we remain amongst those in a world seemingly chaotic. How do we tolerate the intolerant? How do we navigate the space with a lack of understanding for the illogical box that others live in? They act so oblivious to the consequences of their decisions and legislation as if we are the only nation that exists. As if other people and countries were stripped from the planet when we all have to be here simultaneously. Such a blindfolded privilege. Ask yourself, do others have the right to be? Do we all matter beyond our differences and our immediate pressing needs? What is significant to all? Can we live free? Selfishness is the pollution of everything. Got another piece for you all. It feels so tight right before election time. You can cut the tension with a knife. Slice up the American public into pie charts with Gallup polls and graphics. Political art begins to surface. Social commentary on the tragic interactions between apathetic political figures and overacting agents policing the lives of others haphazardly. And we can never agree on the simple things, let alone the more complicated conflicts and conundrums creating a quicksand. And we're sinking in their actions and thinking. We're drinking the Kool-Aid with the gullibility flavoring sugar-coated or saccharine stirred up words, our bellies aching from the artificial taste of it all. Such a waste of small talk, titanic empty promises and icebergs of individuals chilled in their own sense of false security. They spew toxic words on a Ferris wheel of stupidity, sounds something like, global warming? There's no such thing. Only leftists say the polar caps are melting. Let's just keep fracking and attacking the earth one drill at a time. We don't need to recycle. The planet will be fine. Tree huggers are the worst. Overturn and challenge everything from the FDA. Deforestation? Go ahead. Have your way. Elephants don't need tusks. Kill the snow leopard and give the fur to us. No coat. Matter of fact, remove the natives, I mean Indians, from their land and put those pipes right through it. Flint water crisis where? You people are out of hand. Black Lives Matter is a scam, a hate group, just like the Klan. All lives matter, honey. Why don't you people understand? You people should be colorblind. Just like me, I don't see color. Matter of fact, I don't see anything. That's that piece.
It seems a great irony that a culture like the one in Texas that has held black people in bondage and continues to dog their efforts to equality primarily identifies itself as Christian. Oppressors in some other nations pretty commonly saw themselves as Christians. All of it sort of implying an existential struggle between good and evil, between God and Satan. Listening to the songs and the speeches, the issues addressed, and the looming racist, there I said it, threats today, makes one clearly understand which side of this struggle belongs to Satan.
So let us pray. Gracious God, we hear of peace only as a faraway dream. We long for it in our lives, in the lives of our families and our friends, in this country. But with each passing day, the prospect of peace seems to be increasingly tantalizing. Restlessness seems to be the order of our present existence. Our inner restlessness, rooted in various anxieties, and our social restlessness, rooted in the evils that go around us, the relentlessness of this world plagued by conflicts of all sorts. Gracious God of peace, we hear that peace is only a dream we would love to be a part of, a dream that we long to have in our hearts, in our neighborhoods, in our countries, and our places of worship. We pray that we experience that peace that passes all understanding. We pray that we have and may experience in you the peace, the true peace of this world. Peace be with our siblings who have been targeted with hate, racism, and bigotry. May they, as a community, be an agent of healing to all of us. And lastly, as we look around this place right now, penetrate the grieving heart, accompanying the lonely one, remember the forgotten, give vote to the voteless, reclaim the strayed, make music out of the disharmony of conflict and chaos. Let our restless hearts rest in you. This is the prayer we pray for all of us. In your name of peace, amen. Go in peace and get activated. Let's go out there and vote. Play that music.
From Martin Luther King Plaza in San Antonio de Béjar, this is Thomas Booker for Bondi Tunes International.
Oh,
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes international correspondents, Declan Hughes.
Hello from Dublin, Ireland. Henry O'Donovan often asks me to provide a take on a wide range of subjects from this part of the world. This can range from world, regional and local current affairs to sports, which I cover on 103.2 Dublin City FM as a main broadcasting role. As a history graduate, I like to compare the events of today with the events of the past and look for parallels. This is Europe correspondent Declan Hughes, and I am Bondi Tunes International.
007, licensed to sing. 1964, and the third Bond film, marked the beginning of a tradition of having a theme song sung over the credit titles at the beginning of the film. And the first one went to Shirley Bassey, the first of three she did for the series, and the one which became her most famous recording, Goldfinger, composed by John Barry and with lyrics by Leslie Bricusse and Anthony Newley. Shirley Bassey was John Barry's choice to record the song. He'd been conductor on Bassey's national tour in December 1963, and also the two had been romantically involved. Barry had played Bassey an instrumental track of the song prior to its lyrics being written. The singer would recall that hearing the track gave her goose pimples. She recorded it on August 20, 1964, at London's CTS Studios. The track's producer credit named Bassey's regular producer, George Martin, but the session was in fact overseen by Barry. Bassey's recording was almost taken out of the film because of producer Harry Saltzman's opinion. He hated it, saying, "That's the worst blank song I've ever heard in my blank life." Saltzman would also dislike Bassey's subsequent Bond theme, That for Diamonds Are Forever. However, time constraints did not allow for the possibility of a replacement Goldfinger theme song being written and recorded. The release of the disc on vinyl sold more than 1 million copies in the US, and it also reached number one in Japan, number four in Australia, and the top 10 of many European countries. Goldfinger was not one of Bassey's biggest hits in her native UK, its number 21 peak being far lower than that of the 9 top 10 hits she previously scored. But despite Bassey subsequently returning to the UK top 10 3 more times, Goldfinger would ultimately become her signature song in the UK as well as the rest of the world. At the observance of 50 years of Bond films at this year's Oscar ceremonies, the ever-youthful 76-year-old Shirley Bassey once more performed the song she had made her own, to a huge round of applause from the celebrity audience.
A cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold.
sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.